I'll be too nervous to. I thought I'd be lost for words.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Lost for Words DraftKings podcast. I'm joined, as ever, by my co-host Matt Vincenzi. Matt, hello.
Hey, Tom, excited to be back after that captivating week of golf last week with the Zurich.
I'm so glad that we didn't do a show on that. I've got to be honest. Oh. Like, we've done it in the past, right? Like, I think we were, for consistency purposes, we've done it in the past, and they just need to just get rid of it. Like, I can't believe they've dropped the WGC match play, but still keep this alive. I don't really get it. And then you've got the Grant Thornton event, right, where they do LPGA and PGA players. Like, just roll this event into one and just get rid of one of those two.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the mixed stuff. I know people don't, like when people say that. It's just I'm not big on it.
I have no interest in it, but, like, if they're going to do two of them, they might as well just make it that one, I think.
Or they should do – I think they should be more than two. I mean, I think they should work match play. They should have an individual match play event, and I think this Zurich maybe completely – not have the Zurich, do something else at a different course and have a team match play event where it's saying you can do the exact same thing. It's such have the two teams that are playing together. It's a match. Obviously, you could probably cut the field down a little bit to do that. But team match play is so much better than team stroke play.
Yeah, it's never going to work in terms of captivating an audience with the field. Like, even if I know that the viewing figures were up, whatever, on Sunday because Rory and Lowry won, but, like, it took Rory and Lowry to pair together in an event they didn't really want to play, have any interest in it. I just don't like it. I just don't think it's
really, it was some of the worst golf I've ever seen in a professional event on the back nine on Sunday. I was watching it and I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Why were you watching it?
I don't know. This is what I do. I just watch it.
You're just sick. Like, did you bet on it?
I did, but I didn't have anyone in contention. I had Mitchell and Dahman who are outside of the. But I guess probably because my kids want to watch, like, something ridiculous, and I think Sunday we watch golf and it's kind of routine that's been established, and I might as well take advantage of it.
Yeah, I got my fix at like 5 a.m. local time because we were watching Japan and sweating some bets over there, and that we'll forget about that one quite quickly. But, like, yeah, I can't bring myself to watch those tournaments. Like, I know you should in terms of, like, do we want to see if players are passing the eye test and things like that, but, like, I just can't. You'll end up getting too in the weeds about players in that sort of format, so not too keen on that. I don't think it's a good prep leading into a major, coming off of a major and a elevated event as well. Like, it's just a weird schedule. And then we come this week to the CJ Cup Byron Nelson. Matt, how do they put two names in one? Like, why? Because it's CJ Group is the sponsor, right? Like, CJ Cup, it was just a tournament. So why is it CJ Cup Byron Nelson? Why is it not just Byron Nelson presented by CJ or CJ Byron Nelson? Like, why is it CJ Cup Byron Nelson?
It's a good question. I guess it would just be the CJ Byron Nelson. That would make more sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, really odd. And before we move any further, I got to give myself some credit. I did give out at the end of our last show together a couple weeks ago that Seamus Power top 20 plus 450. So, but we just got to take a brief moment to acknowledge that.
We do need to acknowledge that. And we need to acknowledge it even more so because I think he's now one of the most popular bets this week to win.
It was all started by me. So if he does win, just know I put him on the radar.
Yeah, like, all credit to me, I put him.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. Picking him out top 20 that week, I think arguably more difficult than picking him to win this week. And look, you're going to get rewarded much higher if he wins this week. He was still 60, 70 to 1 or whatever. But, like, it's now obvious, right? Like, he had his best iron week for a year and a half. Good call. Enjoyed it.
It was perfect too because I could have said top 10, it would have won. It would not have won. So the 12, he finished 12th. So, and that's enough for no dead heats, none of that, full payout. That's how we do it.
That's it. Maybe we'll chuck a couple of those in at the end again this week. DraftKings. I think that's fun. Matt, let's stay on course. So we are on a DraftKings show this week. when it's an event like this, how much harder is it to put a DraftKings lineup together? And by that I mean that, like, it's not like you can pick Scottie Scheffler who can separate himself based on ball striking. You know reasonably what needs to be done to win. You need 20 under or better to win here. Probably 20 under. You're going to need 25, 26, 27 birdies probably. Like, it's so hard. It's so hard to find someone that's going to separate themselves in that way.
It is. It's harder, I guess, in some ways, but in more ways, it's much, much better. And I hate playing no-cut DraftKings. It's really, you should be able to, if you get 6 out of 6 through the cut in a DraftKings lineup, you should get a big advantage in everybody. On these no-cut, limited field events, you could have a lineup that's in first place on Friday and come dead last by Sunday because you have these good players who should have missed the cut, and they're really highly owned, and now they're storming the leaderboard. And it's like, it completely takes the fun out of it. And that's why one reason I prefer 72-hole events, obviously it's from a betting and DFS perspective, but it's so much better. DFS. I would rather play DFS for this week than I would for Quail Hollow or whatever else we're going to be doing. And now the second point, Scotty, it's better without him too, because it's not fun playing when there's a guy who's going to be 45-50% owned, and he's it's impossible for him to finish outside of the top three. Like,
yeah,
it just completely ruins the entire thing. So I think this is a great week for it.
I think it's a great week in the sense of, like, I feel comfortable with the players I've picked and the formula, but I just think it's so hard to, like there's so many players that can shoot 20 under. Like, is that, that's what, like, for, like,
yeah.
Whereas, like, when you look at, like, a Heritage, it's like, hell, like, there's only really 20 players that are probably in contention to win, right? I think that's the, whereas I think you can get down to 200-300 to 1 and 6,100 this week and probably have someone that can get in the mix. So I think from that perspective, like, there's going to be a lot of Skaskin approach, but that's why we're here. That's why we're breaking it down. Wolves had a tourist out, not a massive surprise. He was going to play, I think, 6 or 7 weeks in a row if he'd have played this week, so not a huge surprise there. Jordan Spieth 10-9, Jason Day 10-4 remain the only two people above 10k. Not afraid of either of them.
Oh, not at all. I mean, it's pretty ugly up there. I mean, if I had to choose one, I would choose Spieth.
Yeah.
He does have the course history here. He's not playing relatively well. I'm not paying up for either of them. I don't see how anybody could, which might make them appealing if you can get Spieth as the favorite in a Texas event at, I don't know, whatever he might be, relatively low owned. That could be appealing for some people. But no, I'm not going up there. I don't know how you could feel comfortable playing him or Day this week.
I think the thing is with Day, right? Like, obviously he won here last year, but that was coming off of form where he'd been 7th at Torrey, 5th at Phoenix, 9th at Riviera, 10th at Bay Hill, played well in the match play. You know, he was leading up to a win all season. It just happened to be that he finally got it done here, whereas he's just not playing like that right now. So that's the problem. And then Spieth is just, I think he's probably a little bit injured. I think that wrist is flaring up more often than he even expects. I guess the one thing you would say for him is, like, he's got that kind of volatility at the moment that actually probably works in this sort of event where he can just kind of shoot low all of a sudden and get himself into the mix. But even when he was 6th at Phoenix, like, didn't have a chance to win.
No. No.
He was 3rd at Century, so that's, like, the only bright spot this year.
Yeah, and that was a lower scoring event. I mean, and are we looking for a reason to talk ourselves into it, or we just both can agree that we shouldn't pay up for him?
No, right? No, out. We're out. We're going. I'm the same on Seawoo as well. Like, nothing makes me want to bet Seawoo or pick him in my lineups. You like betting him?
I like betting him when he's 66-1, not when he's 18 or 20-1.
I was going to say, like, if you're
betting, favorite,
he is just, he, like, the reason he's the price is because he's so consistent. He's probably going to get you through the cut. He's probably going to give you a chance. But he's not getting anywhere near contention, right? Like, he's had no chances to win, really. I can't see it. Like, I can't suddenly just see it. I know he doesn't live in Dallas, right? He comes second here last year, but I just don't see it. I've just got no real feeling towards Siwoo Kim winning anytime soon.
Was that us who were talking about this last week when we were saying how, or a couple weeks ago, it's the opposite of what it used to be. It used to be like either he wins or he misses the cut, and now it's like he just finishes 20th every week.
Yeah, and that's probably good for him. Like, it's a good progression for him as a player, and eventually he might get back into those kind of winning runs. But short term, it's not good for his chances of winning, right? Like, I just don't think he's playing that well. I'd rather take a shot on Sungjae, that's a lead showing a little bit of life recently, or Adam Scott even, who, again, not probably going to play either of those, but definitely would rather play those over Seaworth, I think, this week.
Yeah, my two favorite guys up here, I don't like Sungjae coming off the win and traveling from Korea. And he's been fine late recently, but it's not enough to convince me. I've up here the most in the higher range. I like Scott and Norn as safer plays. I think both of them could play really well this week. I couldn't get to betting Norn or Scott, even though I like them both. I think I could definitely see them both finishing in the top 10. But just because Scott's quietly good, 14th and 22nd, 22nd at the Masters, 14th in Texas, and finished in the top 10 here last year, he's almost reminds me of Day of last year, where it's like, you're not betting him because the number sucks, and can you make 25 birdies? And I thought that's what I felt about Jay Day, but he goes and does it. So, yeah. I mean, and maybe even Norin too, to an extent.
But I think even with Day, right, like going back to the earlier point, like at least he was actually contending. Like Scott has been good and solid, but like Day had been in with a shot of winning, right? So like, I just, for the first time in a long time now, there's no one really at the very top I'm interested in. I think the first start for me is Jaeger at 9-2. Like, I legitimately think he can win. I haven't bet him, and I think I might regret that by the end of the week. And I think the reason why people are maybe overlooking a little bit, he's, you know, relatively short in the odds, you know, comparative to who he is. But it's just because he's won recently. Like, if he finished second at the Houston Open, people would be all over him.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be one of them. But my just betting philosophy is I don't. Okay, so what are the odds of Jaeger winning an event a couple weeks ago? What are the odds that he wins that event? 40-1, 50-1. Yep. Now, take a step back prior to him winning that. What are the odds long-term, if you look ahead and say, what are the odds he wins two of his next three starts?
Yeah.
You get down from 40-1 to 1,000-1. And I maybe that's flawed logic on my behalf. I don't know if it is or not, but that's how I've always bet, how I always will bet. And I'm not betting on him to win the second time in 3 weeks. I just think water finds its level. In order to win, Scotty had to miss a 5-foot putt, who's not playing this week, I know, but things just tend to even themselves out. So that's why I'd be out on. DraftKings wise makes a lot of sense, though.
Yeah, so I think that's the thing. I think that's mainly the reason I didn't do it myself, is like it's just hard to see him, but I think the value's there. The other argument I'd make is like when he was winning for the second time in the Corn Ferry Tour in May 2017, he then won again in June 2017. Like, I know it's Corn Ferry, it's a different level, right? But can follow up wins. And the depth just isn't there. Like, I think this is the only real reason why I feel a little bit different about it at the moment. And look, it might just be that Lucas Glover did it. It might be that Tony Finau did it a couple of years ago. Like, we've seen people win events in, you know, quick fire goes. It might just be that for every occasion like that, there's 10 others that it just doesn't happen. So I think overall, doing it the way you do it is probably going to, you know, pan out. But I think for a DraftKings perspective, like this is a guy that played really well at the Heritage for the most part, 67, 68, 67 for the first three rounds, shot 73 on Sunday. He was already out of it, so not sure how much he cared there. And then the two starts he's been here, he shot two rounds of 65 on Friday and Saturday on debut, go 12th into the final round, finished 38th. And then last year, closes 65, 63, he's finished 11th. Like, he just feels like the guy that's going to go and make 25 birdies and at least give himself a chance.
You could argue that this was a better course fit for him than when he won in Houston, because he's a birdie fest guy.
Yeah, like I actually think, like, and that's why I think if Scheffler makes that 5-foot putt, wins the playoff, probably comes in as like the Siwoo Kim this week. Like, so that's why I think you just have to play him in some capacity. I think I'm going to put him in first round leader as well. Going to be writing that up shortly. I think that and DraftKings, I think, is a good way to start. And I'm pretty comfortable with him being my main bullet at the top.
Yeah.
Are you taking Scott or Norin as your Are you taking both?
So I'm thinking of ways to make ourselves unique here if you really are trying to. Because I do think the key to this week, like you said, you don't know who can get to that 20 under. Literally could be anybody. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if 80 different players won this week, right? Like anyone can win. So I think in weeks like that, it's important to go away from the popular builds and the popular players more so than it is usually. Because usually when you dive into those popular players, it's because there really are very few scenarios that exist where it doesn't pay off. And in this case, it's the opposite, right? So you want to get as more off the board as you can, because crazy things can happen. So you do want this is one of those weeks you do want to swing for the fences. So one thing that I think would be unique in a way to start your lineups is starting with people going to go balance, right? No one's going to go at the top. So I think starting with like three guys in the 9K could be a way to make your build a little bit different.
Yeah, and I'm pretty happy with going with Jaeger, Tom Kim, and then one of those guys that you're playing there in Scotland.
I don't like Tom Kim.
Do you not like Tom Kim because he's popular this week? Do you not like Tom Kim because he's maybe a little bit too short off the tee to really take advantage of the easier holes? Is it a combination of both? What is it?
It is a combination of all those things, plus the fact that he's been playing awful up until the last few weeks. Even at Heritage, he lost a bunch of strokes off the tee. When he played in Texas at Valero, that was two starts ago, and that's one of the worst I've ever seen him play.
Yeah.
He was playing with Akshay in the featured group, so I got to see every one of his shots. And he just looked completely lost. I had people at the event watching and just said, there's something completely wrong. I think a 30th of the Masters and an 18th at Heritage is great. Heritage still, again, loses almost 3.2 strokes off the tee. So I'm not buying that he's back. If he was back, I still don't think this is the perfect course. If this was the perfect course, I still think he's too popular. So I don't see any reason for me in particular to play him.
So I think for me, he's a better bet than he is DraftKings play, because I think there's still volatility in whether the range of results, as you just said there. I just think with the iron play of what he's shown, second and 14th, the last two in strokes gained approach, going into the wheelhouse of 20 under par is exactly what he wants. 20 under, 24 under, 24 under, I think is what he's won at so far. So just in that respect, it feels like it's perfect for him. He's Dallas resident, isn't he? So like all those kind of things play into hand. I do think he's a better bet, and I would totally get it if someone said, I'm going to go with Scott or Noren. Like, even, I guess, Benny, to a certain extent. Like, he's obviously hitting the ball great.
Yeah, I bet Benny, which, you know, isn't really a huge surprise. I think just tee to green, he's been, like, as good as ever. He's been struggling around the green. And for whatever reason, he's typically a pretty good around the green player. But this last month or so, he's been struggling around the green, which should not matter here. He should be hitting fairways and greens. Everyone really should. He 17th in birdie or better percentage. At the Masters, he finished tied for 16th, his best ever start in a major, tied for the best ever start in the major. He gained 9.16 strokes from tee to green, which is second in the field, only behind Scotty. So, and then at Harbortown, he didn't play well, but the ball striking was still there, just around the greens and putting, which again, this isn't a course where you repeat die, you're really worried about all that type of stuff. And he finished here, tied for 14th here last year. So if it was me, I would start Noren, Scott, Benny, and then take some, because I think the guys you can mix in with that, even though they'll be cheap, you can find winners in that low seven, high six, mid sevens.
Yeah, so at the moment, I've put together Jaeger, Benny, Scott, Mackenzie Hughes as the top four, and that leaves you just over 6,600 for the next two. So you do have to then go, you know, bargain hunting a little bit, but if you can find a real low 6K guy, you can get a decent 7K guy to sort of float your lineup as well. So, and I think there's going to be someone down in that kind of 6-1, 6-2 range where you go, like, I can give him a shot in this type of lineup. Yes. And that's where you're going to get unique, as you said earlier. So I do think there's, you know, do I see someone like I literally don't even know who this guy is, like Wilson Furr has had a couple of good results, or, you know, whatever, like someone like that, that will just kind of put out a lineup. Marty Du played well here last year, 6,300. And then all of a sudden there's a load of things that you can do. in the 7Ks. There's a couple of guys that we like that we talk about every now and then down here, which we'll get to.
You could go lower than Hughes too. I mean,
yeah, exactly that. I like Keith this week, and I think the reason I like Keith is because people see him as this guy that drives the ball well, putts the ball well, and can play well on tough golf courses. And that is true, except now he's added in these elite irons as well. And one of the things I sort of found, Matt, in a bit of research this week, which I was surprised about, because I don't think there's too much logic behind it, but like, there seems to be a lot of correlation between this and the Honda Classic. So KH Lee, two-time winner here, two top sevens at the Honda Classic. That's the only other place he's had two top tens. Austin Eckroat was second here last year and then won the Cognizant earlier this year. CT Pan second here, third, 16th and 17th at the Honda. Ryan Palmer, fifth and eighth here, playoff loser and fourth at the Honda. Adam Scott, eighth here, won the Honda. Daniel Berger, third here, playoff loser at the Honda. It goes on and on like that. Peter Minardi, ninth at both. Bronson Magoon, top 15s at both. Jonathan Vegas, ninth here, fourth at the Honda. Like Charles Schwartzel, third here, fifth at the Honda. So there's enough in that over the couple of, three visits we've had here to suggest there is a reason for that correlation. It only really supported my thought with Keith Mitchell. I was quite happy with him anyway, but I think it's quite a good little thing to have in. And with Mitchell, like I do generally believe like the tougher it gets, the better. That's what ball striking, that's where you sort of separate yourself. But I was really encouraged by the ninth at the Amex where he shot a fine around 62. Sort of suggests that he can get himself in scoring conditions. Phoenix is, decently, low scoring. He shot a fine around 65 at the Honda. Like, I think he's doing enough at 65 in the Mexico Open. I mean, he should have done a lot better at the Valspar, but it's a completely different test to this. Like, I think he's doing enough to suggest that he can come here. And the fact that he hasn't got great course form, I guess, might put some people off.
Yeah. Yeah. I think all those make a lot of sense. He was on my short list. I just ended up going with some other guys over him, and I like, the Norton Scott coming up above him, but I have no issues with Mitchell. I could definitely see him in the mix this week.
There's a couple of players we didn't touch upon in there, like Hoagie and Dietrich. Any interest in either of those two?
I don't. I just think Hoagie's ball striking has been so good for a long time, and he was putting it really. I think he's kind of going the other way a little bit.
Yeah, I think the not taking advantage of that run that he was on is kind of hurting a little bit. The other comment, that so kind of in the same sort of mold to Mitchell, I think people maybe it's just me, it could completely just be me, but sort of mislabel Mackenzie Hughes as this kind of grinder that can play well on tough golf courses and do it all by kind of short game. The guy shot 60 at the RSM Classic and the Travelers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hit 62, 60s everywhere. He's been second at the Honda Classic, which I like. It looks to me that he can Corrales. He's had two top threes in these kind of tests. When the scoring is available, he can go out and do it. And yes, it will be through putting, probably, especially based on his last three results. But last year, he shot 65, 64 to be second going into the weekend. Terrible on Saturday, and then shot 65 again on Sunday. So I think Mackenzie Hughes is the sort of person that can go low with the best of them. And that's why I think he's perfectly suited to this, because he is doing that sort of run of form, Matt, that I like, in the sense of he's not doing the Siwoo Kim. He's consistent every week, but he was 10th going into the weekend at Torrey, fell away. He was 31st at the Genesis, but he was second going into the weekend, 30th at Bay Hill, 26th at the Players. And then he finishes third at the Valspar, probably should have won, 36th hole leader there. 14th in Houston, opening 66, closing 65. And then the Heritage, he was inside the top five going into the weekend, finished 39th. Like, he's doing it for two or three rounds almost every start. And now I just think he'll come here and put four rounds together because it's an easy golf course.
Yeah, I love Hughes. I bet him as well, 55-1 on Monday morning. Last 36 rounds in Texas, he ranks fifth in strokes gained total. So he likes Texas. And then last year finished T14, and he wasn't even in good form. He missed the two cuts in a row prior to that event and the four consecutive events immediately after. So he came here in the worst form he had in a while, and he still finishes T14. His approach game has gotten a lot better this season. I think he is a little bit longer off the tee. Both his wins, like you mentioned, are lower scoring events.
So like 17 under, he's won both of his events, Sanderson and the RSM. Right. Like, I know that's not the 24 or whatever that he might need to get to, but he's done it in individual rounds in other events as well. So I just really love what I've seen from Hughes this season. I actually really like starting Jaeger, Mitchell and Hughes, and I know they'll be popular picks in isolation, but that build, I think, still leaves you some ways to get unique as well.
Yeah, I think so too. I like Hughes a lot.
Anyone else for you that you're really high on in the 8Ks?
Let's see. Hughes. I looked at McNealy a little bit just because I've been trying to find ways to kind of get involved with him, because I think there might be something coming. But he ended up being a little more expensive than I thought. But he's been good off the tee recently for some reason. And he's putting it great, obviously. But I could see myself playing him. But if not, I think we'll skip down to that 7,900 spot with a guy that we both really like.
I like Hubbard a bit.
Okay.
That's like, got that third at the Zurich Classic last week, but like, he's just that player. You look at Torrey Pines and the players, he's just unbelievable with his irons. Like, he would have been one of the better players in the field. Pebble Beach, really good with his putter. Honda, really good with his putter. Like, he has that kind of volatility that I like, whilst also having this decent amount of floor where he's not going to miss the cut, you don't think. So hasn't done it necessarily here yet, but he's been 34th and 32nd. He's open with a 65 on debut, second round 65 in the second start as well. So I think Hubbard's interesting. Let's drop down to the 79. So we're talking James Power.
Let me add real quick on Hubbard. Now I definitely know you didn't watch on Sunday.
He was bad.
Oh, he was horrific.
But everyone.
But he was like missing 3-footers, chipping it by his feet. It was a turnoff for me. I know it probably doesn't matter for this, but
yeah,
it was not great.
I did not watch. So there you go. Like that is a perfect example. I did not watch any of it.
Power. I love. He was my first bet of the week. I said last week. I was like, I don't care what the number is. I'm betting Seamus Power next week. I thought it might be like 45. When I woke up, it was 80. So I hit the 80 pretty good. I was really thrilled with that number. T12 at Heritage, 4.4 in approach. We talked about that. And that's kind of his combo, right? Irons and putting. He's kind of doing that again. He's been here 3 times. Hasn't even finished outside of the top 20 yet. He's 4th in strokes gained total at the course. Loves the easy tracks, Barbasol, Butterfield, Bermuda. Likes the weak field events. I just think it's the perfect spot for him.
Yeah, like it's just the whole formula, right? Like it's the perfect course with the perfect scoring conditions at the perfect time when his irons have got hot. I guess the only slight concern is like, has it come too soon in the upswing of form? And I think the answer is no, because I think that he had that chance at the Valspar and he, you know, didn't do very well on the Sunday there, but then sort of held it together when he played well all week at the Heritage. So I think the answer is no, and I think we're safe with him. But like, I guess that would be the one devil's advocate. Like, is he more likely just to go and finish 14th, 15th this week and carry on this steady form and then go and win somewhere else? But I still really like him.
Yeah, and if that's the case at this price, he still is a good DraftKings play.
Yeah, exactly that. Matt, I'm kind of intrigued by Chan Kim. He's a player that a lot of people were high on when he went to the Corn Ferry. Like, I think they were expecting him to kind of win a decent amount. Took him a while to kind of get established there and then finally did it. 14th at the Amex. Good scoring event there. 8th at the Mexico Open. He was 3rd after 54 holes. 28th at the Cognizant, if there is anything in that kind of crossover. He had a 3rd round 65 in Puerto Rico. Still managed to finish 61st. He was even better like later on in the last few starts. He's been 20th going into the weekend at Houston. He's been 14th in Texas, so it's a good two good signs coming into Texas again. He was 6th at the Corrales, open with a 66, closed with a 65, and I just think he's playing really solidly. I mean, he definitely is playing really solidly. He's made like 8 or 9 cuts in a row. This feels like the type of event where he'll play well.
Yeah, he was on my betting card. I bet him 100-1 on Monday morning. I had, again, another guy I had written down coming to the week, just because he's been ball striking so well. And then Zurich, I liked what they did. He played with Doug Gim. They finished 28th. And South Koreans love this place. You even got the the Korean sponsor this week. So, there's always going to be three or four Koreans in the top 15 at this place. He could definitely be one of them. And a lot of Koreans also live in this area. So I think they're just really comfortable playing it, which is, again, why Siwoo could be pretty popular. Easy courses. He's been great. You get the T14 at Valero, which you mentioned. Then he's T6 at Corrales in his most recent start. So he's gone 14th, 6th, and then that 28th in the team event in his last three starts. So he's playing great golf. These Korn Ferry Tour winners, like he's been, loves these birdie fests. And if he gets in contention, I think he obviously isn't the same, but I think he's comfortable winning because he's won two times on the Korn Ferry Tour as well as eight times on the Japan Tour.
Yeah, this people were just so high on him coming to the Korn Ferry last year, and he was really bad for the start of the season. Then all of a sudden just kicks into overdrive and suddenly takes over. Looking at his three most recent wins, Matt, 32 under par in Japan, won by six strokes, shot 64, 66, 64, 62. And then back-to-back weeks on the Korn Ferry Tour last year, 20 under par despite opening with a round of 70, and then 28 under par where he shot 66, 62, 64, 64. It's just perfect for him. And I don't think it's any coincidence that 14th at the Amex where the scoring's decent, 8th in Mexico where the scoring's there for you, and then 6th a couple of weeks ago in Corrales. So I bet him first round leader at Corrales, and I think he finished. No, I didn't. I bet him each way, and then he finished in the top six. I bet Justin Lauer, first round leader that week. I really like Chan Kim.
I love him, yeah.
So we can put him in this kind of lineup where we've got, this is obviously not necessarily the one that you were putting together, but Jaeger, Hughes, Mitchell, Kim. Then you've got so much money left that you can almost take another higher guy and then just go really, scraping the bottom of the barrel if you want to. That is another alternative, right? You can have Scott, Mitchell, Jaeger, Hughes, Chan, Kim, and leave yourself 6,200 just to take a flyer on someone.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
I think the one worry with that is you almost want a couple more randos in your lineup than you do going all in on four really strong players. But I don't know, it's definitely a way to do it. I think it's not a way that people will look to do it. So that's the main thing you said earlier in the show.
Yes, exactly.
Anything else in the mid sevens? We've got Kevin Yu, 7-5, kind of caught my interest. Justin Lauer, 7-5. Nate Lashley, a little bit, 7-3. Garrick Higo, 7-3, were interesting to me.
None of the guys you mentioned, but I did bet someone in this range, and that is CT Pan, who I bet at 110-1.
Yep.
And I'm glad you mentioned that Honda Classic link because he kind of has that, and his ball striking has been sneaky good the last few starts. The finishes really aren't there quite yet, but let's see. He did finish T3 in Mexico this year, but that iron play has just really come alive, right? He gained 6.6 in approach at the Players. At Valero, he gained 3.7. Another Texas event at the Zurich last week, him and Kevin Yu finished 28th. He's a guy who can get hot with his scoring clubs, has won some, won a lower scoring event when he did win that. He was fourth last year at this event, and in his past 36 rounds, he is 16th in strokes gained total in Texas.
Yeah, he's just probably a better player than he gets credit for because these other kind of middle guys are coming through, like Jaeger and Hubbard, and all these people are being a bit more consistent. He's that type of player that's been out for the last few years, right, and just been forgotten. He had some injury problems, right? It took him a while to get back into the swing of things, I think. And that third at the in Mexico was without any irons really at all. I think he lost strokes and irons that week, and then, as you said, just really found them the last couple of weeks. So yeah, definitely makes appeal. And even when he was 28 but the Cognizant, again, that Honda link, he was actually, I think, inside the top 10 going into the final round. So probably the final finishes don't really show the whole picture, which I love. I love it when that's the case. 28th at the Cognizant, but he was inside the top 10 for the first three rounds. 51st at Bay Hill, but he was actually 17th going into the weekend. 42nd at the Players, but he was 10th after two rounds, 12th after three rounds. He's been there or thereabouts pretty much since he returned to playing consistent golf. So I do like CT Pan. I do like Garrick Higo as well. I think he's coming alive a little bit again.
So you're also telling me about CT Pan, if he gets in a good spot after two or three rounds, to not get too excited yet.
Yes. Yeah, don't get excited. Probably gets 7th after 2 rounds and finishes 42nd. But, you know, that's maybe why we play him in the top 40 bet and sweat that on Sunday. I had Sam Bairstow in Japan. This would have made you laugh, Matt. And it wasn't a lot of money at all. I think I put like $5 on it. Like, and I got up at 5 o'clock to put 4 players in the top 40 bet. One of them was Hao Tong Lee. One of them was this Takahiro Hitaji, who I just tweeted about all week. It was like a 500-to-1 shot. Takumi Kanaya was one of the favourites. And then Sam Bairstow. Sam Bairstow was a 36-hole leader. And he shot over par on both days. In the fight. He finished tied 36th to just sneak in. He shot like
you six got over.
He shot 6 over on the Sunday. So it just hung on to deliver. Like it was like a 50-to-1 bet. But like Takahiro
50-to-1 top 40?
For all four of them.
Wow.
The fourfold. And
They all four to go in. It was a parlay.
Yeah. But Hitaji had started the day in 43rd. So I'd kind of given up and I was like, oh, he's blown it. And then he played Hero Ball and shot like a 65 to just get himself in top 30. And then Bairstow, I was like, what are you doing? Like he was 8th going into the final round and finished like 36th. So he literally had to birdie the last hole to stay inside the top 40. So he
was the only one that screwed you. Well, I saw you were tweeting about that Hitaji guy earlier in the week. And then I saw you tweet he was like 6 over through 7. So I just stopped following. And I thought he was like,
he was dead. Like but then he shot 63 on Friday and 65 on Sunday.
Wow.
So actually, like, I still feel pretty good about flagging him. It was just, you know, that's why he's not.
He had the lowest second round, not the lowest first round, right?
Yeah. So it is what it is. Matt, is Chad Ramey finding a bit of form at the right time?
He was another guy on Sunday who was just so bad.
There you go. So this just shows I probably should have watched a bit of Sunday. But like,
but I mean, to get there, he probably had to be playing pretty well. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, like they finished. Did they lose the playoff? Was it him and Trainer?
Yes. It was so bad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, this is the thing. Like, if I watched those, I probably put myself off loads of players.
It looked like they were trying to lose on purpose.
Probably were. I was probably told to get Rory McIlroy to do karaoke on the stage. But it just seemed like 17th in Houston, where he was 4th going to the weekend, 9th going to the final round. He shot a second round 64, I think, at Corrales. He's had 35th at the Cognizant, first round leader there. A couple of 67s in Mexico. Like, he's not setting the world alight, obviously, but just someone down here, a bit further down, that I thought was interesting. Opened for 66 here last year as well. So maybe just another name in that 7K range.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Any more for you in 7Ks?
I mean, Palmer has that course history.
It's pretty grim.
It is. Oh, there is one more that I bet.
Go.
Alejandro Tosti, I bet. 100-to-1. I do tend to like the people who everyone else hates. So,
what did he actually do?
What did he do? That made everyone hate him.
Yeah.
A couple things. I think he got caught cheating. And then I also think he got suspended for going on like a swearing tirade. And then he also got in trouble another time because he told the rules official he's gonna like kill him or something.
I quite like that. I want a little bit of rogueness in the play. Like, we said we want volatile players, and I'm talking about their scoring attributes, but like, this guy is literally volatile in life. Like,
yeah,
I seem to remember, was it when he was on the Corn Ferry that he got like a little bit of in trouble for the cheating, or was it on the PGA?
It was on the Corn Ferry, and then it was on the Corn Ferry tour, and then he just got in a fight with Finau. I'm trying to think of I want to find that exact quote of what he said to the rules official. He said he's gonna like kill him or something, he told him to go die.
I mean, look, we all say things in the heat at the moment. We're not all perfect humans. Like, I mean, I've never told someone to go die, I don't think, but you know, I'm not a competitive athlete that's trying to win things either. So, you know,
I have told some of that, so I do get it. He's still only 27. I do like that.
Yeah.
He just been getting in trouble a lot, but he was in Texas when he finished tied second behind the beautiful man Akshay, and That was the same tournament, right? And then he's good on the Korn Ferry. I mean, he was in the top 10 like six or seven times in the Korn Ferry Tour, which you, again, have to go really, really low to do. A long shot who I think has a chance if he gets in contention. And he's second in his last 24 rounds in strokes gained off the tee. So he's a long and straight hitter.
Yeah. Justice for Toasty, I think, is the new hashtag.
Yes.
Third round 65 at the Heritage is, you know, pretty much the second. He was a 54-hole leader as well at Houston, wasn't he? So when he does make the weekend, he plays well. I think it's just that volatility, right? Like, even at Torrey Open with 66. So it's just that there's enough there. It's the sort of player that I like for this event. Like, he's shown short bursts, and that's probably enough in this level of field.
Oh, so I misremembered. So I thought he was bad at Valero when Akshay won. So I misspoke on that. It was Houston. He was
Houston.
Yeah.
All
these Texas courses look the same.
Do we just live in Texas on the PGA Tour? Like.
Yeah. I mean, recently. But then also I was thinking too. You had Emiliano Grillo, the Argentinian, one in Texas as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like it. JJ Spawn can get hot for a round. That's probably about it at the moment. I was interested in like Kevin Tway a little bit, which I didn't think I was going to say that in 2024. 32nd in Puerto Rico, second round 65, 37th in the Korn Ferry Club Car, and then finished third at the Corrales, and then played pretty well in this. I mean, you're going to tell me how bad he was on Sunday, but they played pretty well in this team event last week.
I didn't see him.
I mean, look, he's 6,900. I don't think people are rushing to the plate to play Kevin Tway at 6,900. So I think that could be quite interesting.
Yeah, I guess so. That's all I got.
Yeah, it's all I've got, really. There's one player here that I actually think can win, which is a bit bizarre. David Skins is 6,600. He's twice been the 54-hole leader this season already. He was with Toasty, right, in the Houston, and he was 54-hole leader in the Honda as well. So obviously I like that link. But also when you go back to here 2 years ago when he wasn't playing his best golf like he is now, he was the 36-hole leader here, opened 66-63. So just for that kind of contending form that he's had in, you know, two starts already this season. And look, there's no getting away from the fact that he didn't get the jobs done, but like he's hung around, like he's 54-hole leader at the Cognizant and finished fourth with a final round 71. And then in Houston, he shoots a final round 69 to go from first to seventh. Like, it's not like he's been dramatically bad. And I think at one point him and Callum Tarran were like within about three shots of the lead last week before kind of falling away. So look, he's not a superstar by any means, but he's a player that at 41 years of age, he's probably playing the best golf of his career, and we've seen that he can win on the Korn Ferry Tour, and this is probably up his alley if he can kind of muster up the courage to get in the mix again.
Yeah, makes sense. I feel like you could, as unappealing as most of these guys are, in an event like this, you really can make a decent case for a lot of players.
Yeah, and like it just feels right. Like, He likes repeats form as well. He won the Pinnacle Bank Championship a couple of times, beat Sungjae, who knows a birdie fest person. So yeah, I like it. And actually, I think he beat Marty Du as well, who's the guy that finished fifth here.
Yep, that's right. A lot of intriguing names were like guys who I don't necessarily love, but I also wouldn't be shocked. Like Joel Diamond obviously has had up and down season, but he was good last week in that team event, and he typically plays these. He's had some good iron weeks this year. Hoey, it wasn't he like all the rage a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, he's just my first round leader guy, like every time.
But if he's gonna win something, it's probably something like this. I mean, he was 14th at Valero. I could probably play him.
Like, what about Trainer? Is that just too much? Like, you told me how bad he was on Sunday, but like, eighth at the Astara, fifth in Argentina, fifth in the International Series in Macau. Like, it's lower grade stuff. And every time I think he's going to play okay on the PGA, I think I bet him at the Houston Open. He missed a cut there. Like, but he was 19th in Mexico as well. Like, he seems to be just getting results. I would be slightly concerned about the fact he's not stepping up when it's on the PGA Tour and he's only finished 76th here in the past. But I don't know, like he's, I think it's just that type of tournament where you're going to get random like that come through.
I do think so too. I do like it. He's been, especially these easy events, he's been playing pretty well. Yeah. One concern is the course history, cut, 76th yeah, cut. And then another concern, and again, I don't want to harp on this too much, but he had like a 3-footer just to par, a pretty easy par 5 to get to extend the match against McIlroy and Lowry. And the 3-footer, he missed 2 feet to the right.
It's why the guy's like 500 every week. Like I think someone remember someone saying to me, like, what do you do with Martin Train up 400-1? I said if he was 4,000-1, I wouldn't bet him. And that time I really believed that. And all of a sudden I'm like, I've changed my tune on a lot of players this year.
If he was 4,000-1 this week, would you bet him?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
I'd probably bet him at 400-1 this week. There's one other person. This is going back a number of years now, but Sean O'Hare's just flashed a little bit of form. Like, he was 18th at the Corrales, 5th on the Corn Ferry Tour at the Panama Championship. Even when he's missing the cuts, he's shooting a couple of 68s or 65s in rounds where he's missing the cut. Corn Ferry's, I think the Corn Ferry is just terrible for someone like him. Like, he's got to go and shoot 65, 66 or whatever, or 66, 68 to get through the cut, and just doesn't really have that in him, whereas he can kind of get to the PGA Tour and get through with a lower number and then work his way through. Look, it's 2024 and we're talking about Sean O'Hare, but like, again, just think it's that type of tournament where this could play into his hands a bit.
Does Sean O'Hare have nude pictures of you somewhere?
I hope not.
Because I've never mentioned him in my life, and this is the 7th time you've mentioned him to me this year. He's like, please keep my name relevant or I'm going to release these photos I have of you.
It's either him or Aaron Baddeley.
Yes. But Baddeley, I mean, he at least was. I mean, I know O'Hare had a decent run, but
Sean O'Hare was like basically Tiger Woods at one point.
Yes, that's true. But some guys who have a lot of green in this area, because down here is a lot of red. Red means bad. Green.
I feel like you're moving on from Sean O'Hare too quickly, just because, like, let's just get back on track with Sean O'Hare just quickly. Who did he play with? Ben Taylor last week. Ben Taylor is like a club pro, and they shot 63, 65 in their better balls. Now, admittedly, they were 71, 74 in the foursomes. But 65 at the Corrales, 65, 68 at the Corrales, 68 second round at the Puerto Rico, 5th at the Panama Championship. I mean, there's been a couple of 82s and 74s and things like that, but we can't have it all. Like, these are down here for a reason. The guy's from Lubbock, Texas. I don't know how close that is to McKinney, Texas, but I'm sure it's not far. I mean, Texas is a big place. I do remember sort of saying to someone that, I think it was Mike that listens to the show, and I sort of said about how close Texas and Mexico was together, and it's like a 87-hour drive or whatever it was. But, like, you know, like, Sean O'Hare, like, yeah, don't release the nudes, but also might finish well at 6,200.
That's enough, Tom. That's okay. Enough. No,
I think,
I'm just kidding.
I think I've kept them on the hard drive now, so it's all good.
You know what? I actually was going to say something about him, because he does have a lot of green in this area that I'm looking at. In his last 24 rounds, he's 8th in this field in birdie or better percentage. He's 32nd off the tee, which is decent. He's 26th in course history, strokes gained total. He's 45th in approach, which is not quite red. So he does look to stand out amongst the guys down here. And so does the guy right beneath him, Kelly Kraft, for whatever reason.
Kelly Kraft is if we're picking between Kelly Kraft and Sean O'Hare in 2024, we're in trouble, I think.
Yeah, Kraft is 2nd in that birdie or better percentage. But that also gets influenced by the courses that you're playing. So it's not a stroke gain, right?
Didn't Kraft have like a little run last season or something where he sort of showed that he was a good player again?
He did. He's always good at those coastal events. And I think it wasn't last year, but he got into that 5-man playoff when Kisner beat Adam Scott and Russell Henley. That was when I called Russell Henley a name. And I was at the Action Network and I got in trouble.
But you can do what you want on this show. But yeah. Was he in that? In that win, you're saying Wyndham?
He was in that playoff, if I remember correctly, and I think I do.
What year was that?
He said he had a good year last year, and I referenced the Wyndham from 4 years ago.
There you go. Well, lucky, I mean, as long as it was true, I don't care what year it was. You know, I just told you that Sean O'Hare was basically Tiger Woods at one point. So, you know, we're talking some weird things here.
I got to make sure this is true now.
I don't think it's true, by the way. I don't want to burst your bubble, but I think you're completely making this.
No, it's definitely true.
He was not in that. You are thinking of Roger Sloan.
Oh, yeah. Same guy.
Oh, yeah. Roger Sloan. Yeah. You know, same guy. Canadian. I think they have similar hair. Maybe.
Maybe they play together in a team event.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know. Whatever. Unless you're, there's no similarities either in terms of. But anyway, going back to the point of Kelly Craft, like, he was actually decent for a little period last season. 25th at the Fortinet, 16th at the Sanderson, 23rd at the Shriners, and then 19th at the RSM. So he finished 2023 really well. But he's a guy I think can just get hot at any time. It's just whether he can do it for four rounds. Course history says so.
Yeah, I mean, there is a Kelly Craft, Roger Sloan connection somewhere. If someone find it for me, I didn't come out of nowhere. There's something.
Yeah, I mean, well, so we're at that point of the show now where you're making things up and I'm cheerleading Sean O'Hare. So I guess we'll wrap things up fairly shortly. Is there anyone this kind of like 6,100 thing that kind of just catches your eye that people might
expect? 6K flat. Cody Gribble looks like he has a little green on the sheet. Why? Let's see. Is there a reason? He was T23 in Puerto Rico. Since then, he's been pretty bad.
Is Cody Gribble the guy that hit the alligator into the water and, like, he just comes up on the PGA Tour social media every year because he is willing to poke an alligator? That Cody Gribble?
I think so. See, course history-wise, down here, it says anyone who kind of pops out just real quick. Kuchar, 7,100, is 8th in course history. Spahn is 22nd in course history at 7K flat. Johnny Vegas is 14th in course history at 6,900.
What about Kizaya?
He's 17th, 6,600.
Yeah, he was third here on debut, second round 64, final round 63. Somehow he managed to finish 83rd and make the cut, which is a weird one. And then he finished 30th last year, but he was 8th going into the final round 66, opening round 64 Saturday. Kizaya has been pretty dreadful for a long period of time now, but then finished 23rd at the Crowleys. Just might have found enough to kind of come and play this event.
So, another guy in that similar mold is a good friend of mine, the assassin James Hahn. He's 13th in course history. He has some great finishes at this course, and he has not been good this year, but he did finish T5 at the Let's see. I was looking at the wrong thing. No, he was T33 in Mexico, which obviously isn't that great. But you made a connection earlier of guys who are good at both, right? And he's one of them, or?
No, he wasn't. He's not a guy that finished one on the right. I think that was Peter Malnati, I sort of said. I maybe just mumbled it.
Okay.
But one thing I would like to see James Hahn and Alejandro Tosti in a you know, ninja style assassin team up at the jury. That might keep you alive. He has finished third in the Byron Nelson as well, right? Like when it was another course. So he's finished golf course and finished third at another course as well. So it's just
that. I want to see the Texas, right?
What's that?
I think he lives in Texas, I want to say.
Is this just, are you definitely just in that stage of just making things up again now? Like,
yeah.
So James Hahn lives in Scottsdale, Arizona, apparently, according to Wikipedia. I don't know how relevant they are, how recent they are on his kind of location.
Yeah. So same thing. They're both hot.
Exactly that. Matt, I reckon that sums it up. I reckon we've got to the point of the show where we wrap things up. It's nearly 11 p.m. in the UK, and I'm talking about Sean O'Hare having dirt on me. You're talking about things that didn't happen in 2021. and overall, we've just got to that point where the Byron Nelson's obviously slightly beyond us. What is your main takeaway from this event? Like, Because I think that let's bring it back to kind of like serious for a moment. Like, I think the overwhelming thing here, or the overriding feeling that people get here, is like, go and just play long shots, because KH Lee done it 2 years in a row and like, it was a big number. I think when you see what Jason Day did last season, when you look at the overriding, like, what are the overriding leaderboards? Like, I feel like last year's leaderboard was like a lot more kind of the top guys, right?
It was. There was like...
Yeah, Jason Day beat Siwoo Kim and Austin Eckro, but you also had Scheffler 5th, Hatton 5th, Adam Scott 8th. So you had guys up there, right?
And it might not be as crazy low scoring as we expect. I think there might be some win Thursday, Friday. And yeah, it got to, what, 2,300? Like, it's not 28, right?
And also, like, when KH Lee won, he beat Spieth by a shot. Matsuyama was in 3rd, Xander Schauffele 5th, Justin Thomas 5th. Like, take the winner out, which obviously you don't want to completely do, but the guys are there. Like, Sam Burns was 2nd to KH Lee. Daniel Berger was 3rd when he was, you know, still pretty relevant. Jordan Spieth 9th that year. Zalatoris 17th. So, like, the good players generally perform well. So what I'm saying is, like, our approach where we're saying about trying to jam in sort of like 4-9K guys doesn't look that bad of a thing when you think about the history of the leaderboard so far.
Right, I agree. And I also think you have to have at least one South Korean on your betting card or your DraftKings lineup. There were 4 in the top 14 last year, yeah, and I think 7 in the top 40.
If we treat Chan Kim, who actually plays under the American banner but is from sort of South Korea, does he count?
Yes, he counts.
So I kind of like him. I mean, I was playing Tom Kim anyways in terms of betting, but I think Chan Kim's the better DraftKings play. So let's just quickly build a lineup just before we finish, Matt. So start us off with your must play this week.
My must plays, I would say, are I think Chan Kim is definitely in my lineup.
Yeah.
And then I like Pan and Toasty as the two other cheaper guys.
So let's go Pan, Toasty, Chan Kim. And that basically lets us do what we want in this 9K range. So I want to put Jaeger in. Would you rather go Hughes or Mitchell?
I'd rather go Hughes.
Hughes. Then you can literally have anyone but Spieth and Day.
Which we don't want anyway, right?
So you could go Adam Scott, Stephen Jaeger, Mackenzie Hughes, Chan Kim, CeCe Pan, and Tosi, and have $600 left, which means you're obviously going to be pretty unique.
Yeah, I love that.
Or you can pay. I mean, I don't think you want to take Pan out, but if you got rid of Toasty, just because you might get in trouble on Saturday or something, like, mm-hmm, you can then get. But even then, I don't think you're really getting a better player, right? Like Doug Gim, 7,700, Kevin Yu, 7,500, Peter Quest, who we didn't talk about, is obviously going to be popular, 7,500. Like, they're the players that you're switching up. So there's almost no value in doing that. So what about if we go from Pan? Even then, I suppose you can get the switch could be Pan to Power, and then you're using your full budget.
Yes, and then, but again, you're losing some of that uniqueness. But
yeah,
I would probably do that because I do think Power has a real chance to win.
Yeah, I mean, I think there you've got five players that can legitimately win. You've got Scott, Power, Chan, Kim, Jaeger, and Hughes with Toasty that could do whatever.
Toasty could win too. So yes,
there you go. So we've got six guys that can win in that DraftKings lineup. Matt, I enjoyed that. I mean, it took some strange comments from both of us to get there, but it was an enjoyable event. Can you believe we're 2 weeks away from PGA Championship? I read the schedule completely wrong and thought that we had like Myrtle Beach Classic, then the Wells Fargo. They're on the same week.
Yes, I did too, actually.
Yeah. So like,
I thought it was a standalone event, the Myrtle Beach thing.
So did I. Like, and they're doing like invites for like George Bryan and stuff like that. Like, I thought it was going to be a decent event, and it's not. It's just like a secondary event.
Yeah, I mean, well, at least we don't have to watch it.
Yeah, so we're not getting any. I don't think we're learning anything about the PGA Championship this week.
No, I think you can have a lot of guys going into that thing. We have no idea where their game's at.
I think the schedule is so, like, everyone rips the shit out of LIV, right? The schedule is bad for the PGA Tour going into this PGA. I know that, like, Quail Hollow should be pretty good, but, like, it's basically the only event now that everyone's got to get into a group.
And as bad as it was having an elevated event the week after a major, I think it's even worse having one the week before a major, because you're not giving guys a choice of how they're able to prepare. They all have to prepare the same way.
Because, like, everyone sort of says, like, oh, the LIV guys just have to do what they're told. They're going to have to go and play Doral before the Masters. They're getting a week off next week.
Yeah.
By the way, I love Bryson DeChambeau for the PGA Championship.
Oh, yes. I think he's winning it. You know what? The only different thing is why I could maybe see him not winning is because I think he could win the U.S. Open. He has that the Payne Stewart connection that I think is just written in the stars a little bit. I like him for both.
I just think with the like Swing Sandy, like they say, like the Oak Hill thing, the Winged Foot thing, where he can just go and, because he's still so long, right? Despite the fact that he's kind of slimmed down and stuff. I just love how engaged he is right now. He just seems to be really on it. He's playing every course he should play well out on the LIV. He's playing well. So, hot tip for anyone. Like, I'll probably be playing Bryson DeChambeau in a couple of weeks' time.
I got a 55-1 from 6 months ago.
Perfect. Like, I think he's like, down to 30 now, right? And like, the only thing I would say is I don't think he's going to do anything more. Like, so I'm not too worried about his number getting any smaller at this point. But I guess the only thing happens if Scheffler pulls out, his baby comes along.
That'll be interesting. I mean, that gives us the rest of us a chance. Maybe he takes through 3-4 weeks off prior.
I think actually, he's, regardless whether he tees up or not, I don't think he wins this one. So I think it's going to be harder for him to separate himself. I think he wins the US Open again. But then, not again, but like wins again at the US Open. So I think he's going to go Masters, US Open, then just not PGA.
Yeah, I don't think he wins any of the remaining three.
It's tough. It's so tough, right, to do. If you had to pick just one player right now, would it be Bryson?
For the PGA? Two, Bryson or Olberg, I think it's one of the two.
Yeah, like I think it's tailor-made for him, right? Like, is he just going to have this Rory-esque type start to his career? Or is he just going
to... I think that's what it feels. It feels so similar to me.
And he was just like, he like basically followed Rory around in the practice rounds and then just suddenly learned from him and then basically almost won it. Like,
and skill set wise, they're so similar. I mean, it's the young Rory just off the tee. The only difference, I guess, is Rory was much younger when he was doing what.
I still can't quit Cameron Young all of a sudden. Like, I think he's going to play well as well.
I think he's a good, I think so too.
So I like Bryson and Cam Young at the moment. That's where I'm looking. Because I was originally coming into it thinking, like, from the Masters, I sort of thought, right, okay, you saw Morikawa and you saw Homer come to the fore when they weren't at their best, right? Like, should we just be playing these guys that are getting to bigger numbers? Because we know what they can do. Like, Justin Thomas is getting to 50-1. He loves the PGA Championship. He's going back to Kentucky. Like, should we just be betting it on that basis? But I think he's a little bit lost. So he did gain in all areas, I think, at the Heritage. But, yeah, I just think it's Bryson and Cam Young for me at the moment.
Yeah, I think that makes plenty of sense.
There we go. We'll cover that in a couple of weeks' time anyway. But I enjoyed that, Matt. I enjoyed it much more than you'd expect to enjoy the Byron Nelson. So looking forward to the week, seeing how David Skins and Alejandro Tosi battle out on Saturday and Sunday again. And we move on.